my pleasure to introduce our speaker today. We've just turned on the air conditioner, and the question in our mind somewhat is, can the people in the back hear perfectly all well over the noise of the air conditioner? It's difficult, why we can't turn it off. It's always been fascinating to me to see the mixture of the Eastern and Western philosophies that have intermingled and come to resynthesize into the basic truths in recent years. Our speaker today, Reverend Adano Christopher Lay, is a product of Eastern and Western thought and ancestry, having an Oriental father and a South American mother. It's kind of awesome to end up introducing someone who spent some 21 years meditating at least 8 hours a day, and thinking how difficult it is for some of us to apply these disciplines for even much shorter periods of time. But as he will tell you, that where it is in the application of these truths. And today he's going to be speaking on techniques in prayer healing. Interestingly enough, last night, on the evening news, CBS had about a 5-minute film clip of a man in England, an Anglican minister, also named Christopher, last name Neil Smith, who does spiritual prayer healing and in exercises, sponsored by the Anglican Church, with their approval, has done over 1,000 exorcisms in England. When the Church of England gets to that point, and some of the other things that we've seen both in Virginia Beach and elsewhere around the country, insofar as prayer and healing, of what it can do, I think we can all share and learn a little bit more from Swami Nityananda Saraswati. Thank you, Jeffrey. Can you hear me? I'm always accused of speaking very low, you know. Before we start, let us calibrate our minds, especially for today we're dealing with healing. And calibration of the mind is a form of healing. If you line up your consciousness, you will get it immediately. A very fascinating part of a spiritual research, healing, because every feature of spiritual life has often been known to demonstrate healing qualities. And when I've investigated most of it, I discovered that it's not a person that is doing the healing. There is one central force behind it all, that is the into healing. That is the divine life energy. Remember what I just said. There is one central force or power behind all healing, the divine life energy. This divine life energy has become us all, and we are either using it in lesser or greater degrees. If we don't use it sufficiently, then there must be some reason that is blocking it. And that reason you call dis-ease. You're out of ease, out of flow with that creative life energy. Now, you want to get back in a state of ease. Therefore, the most natural thing that we would do is to try and utter words. So if you're in pain, the first thing you do is giving release. In so doing, the life energy seems to respond to the groaning or the sound emitted by the human mechanism. Yet within that very behavior pattern lies one of the most unique methods or techniques of bringing about a healing. Now, don't think this is the only technique. There are many, many techniques to bring about healing. But this is the first natural expression brought to the surface by a mechanism out of ease, that is to groan. We fail to realize that groaning, when developed properly, is a scientific method for healing. Let's think of it. The baby groans, and we rush over to massage it, but yet the groaning is essential. The mother is pregnant, and she's groaning too. The groaning is essential. When you bang any portion of the mechanism, you grunt and groan, but that is essential because it releases the stress. It releases the basic shock within the cells. If we can get this shock to continue to dissipate from that natural movement or natural sound, we can start the trend of bringing the life force back in balance within ourselves. But because we are afraid and we don't know, and environmental training, we seek some other form of therapy to heal it or to ease the ache, not fully realizing that that groaning lies a very important principle. Groaning is sound. And what is prayer? Prayer is sound. We are praying to the unseen force. It's the same creative life force we are praying to, that we are sending sounds to. We are channeling ideas to that creative life impulse to correct the imbalance in the body. Yet if you could realize that a groan is a natural sound, and if you could understand Sanskrit, that groan is a Sanskrit mantra. The interesting thing, Sanskrit is the language of nature itself, the very sound power, sound potency locked up in the human mechanism and in all creation. And within this human mechanism, we have the letters of the alphabet of Sanskrit, all placed in there by the Creator. And the ancient men, when they looked inside, they saw these symbols At the same time, they recognize the various sum potencies in them. Now, let us take anyone in the room who's got some ache, and let us try what is called the first experience of the groan. Just close the eyes and think of some ache that you want to release from the mechanism, and let the consciousness groan. It's not something to be ashamed of. In fact, you're applying an actual technique to release inattention. If it's easy or loud, however you want it, let it be, let it flow out of your system. This is a way of discharging the pent-up tension from the ache or the pain in the body. The mere groan, and it comes to you naturally what song you will make. You don't have to invent songs for groaning. The mere body ache is a mantra, and mantra when repeated is released. That's the power of a mantra. The power within a mantra is repetition. The mantra is the sound. The sound is within the mechanism. Whatever the sound the mechanism wants to release, then just repeat it. This is a natural thing children do, yet we seem to lose it. To feel whatever the sound is for that particular ache, it comes to your mind, either a na or a oo or a om. Some kind of a vowel sound will come up, and that's sufficient enough to indicate what that mantra is, or sound is, or prayer is, and the mere repetition brings about identification. Identification brings release. Release is therapy. Okay? Now you can practice at home with it. The next technique that a human being can apply naturally, and it's prayer in terms of healing, and that is affirmation. To affirm. Some of us know that to mean positive thinking. Well, positive thinking means that we send the thought out with complete understanding, affirm it, and let it come into manifestation. But remember this, not all of us have the capacity or have the capacity to be positive right away. You know, we can think positive, but we don't live positive right away. That's the problem too. If you think of a positive thought, you try to bring your mind to it, it always seems something comes along and blocks it, and then you don't release. Living positively and thinking positively are two different things altogether. When we affirm a positive thought, we have to have an ideal, some ideal that has the behavior that will help us to live it now, positive. So we must look for an ideal. We can't look to the tree as an ideal. We can't look to an animal as an ideal. We can't look to the sky for an ideal. We have to look to a human being as the ideal. What is the ideal behavior behind the thought or affirmation? Well, since we're involved from the religious science, the greatest ideals are your religious teachers of truth. They have given the affirmations and they have given the behaviors. And we can now incorporate the action with the thought. Let us take Master Jesus and use one of his affirmations pertaining to health. Come unto me, all ye that travail and are heavily laden, and I will refresh you. I repeat it again. You'll notice there is no negative implication in those words. Come unto me. Leave what you're doing. Leave the very association with the negative thought condition and come, that means surrender unto your Christ self within you. You have an ache and a pain. The ache or the pain can be very, very depressing. The attachment to it because of association from previous aches and pains, you may not automatically want to release or let go. But come unto me means drop it, detach for a second, and let your consciousness go up to the vital life power, which is the Christ in you, the God power, and let it regenerate you, regenerate those areas of your mechanism that are clogged up, blocked up, overworked, and fatigued. So what can be clogged up or blocked up with this mechanism except the sensory nature? Very sensory nature that is relating or telegraphing ache or pain to the mind. I bang my hand and there's a sensation here. So my senses remember. I saw I did it. I felt I did it. I heard I did it. I can smell it too if possible or even taste it. But you know, among the Indians of the reservation, if you bang your hand, they say lick it. Well, I want to ask why you say lick it. They say saliva is good. What does a dog do when he bangs his portion of his body? He licks it. So the human being, this seems like a piece of dirtiness. But that is because we don't comprehend what is working inside. So merely take the hand and lick it would seem to release stress. Later on, as we got more sophisticated equipment, we will see saliva is a form of electrolytic discharge for pain. As soon as equipment is developed to prove that to you, you will start licking most of the pains off your body. But this is an electrolytic discharge for the pain. In time, we will become aware of it. It's a healing, and a mere gesture, movement, is a prayer. Prayer don't necessarily mean only the words, you know. It's the intent and the identity that brings the healing, that brings the release. Jesus is saying to us, come unto me, all ye that travail and are heavily laden, and I will refresh you. I will give you release. I will revitalize you. Well, all right, let us put this into effect, an affirmation in which we can participate right now. Anytime you look at a statue of Jesus, which is the most unique gesture that you gravitate to? Can anyone demonstrate it? Right? Isn't that the most when you seem love to rush up to him? This hand, when he's doing that, you don't want to go too close to him. Or when he's like this, you don't want to go close. But this is a strange expression. Yet let us say the gesture, the relationship of the gesture
and identify for a few minutes right here in the chair and see if you will not get released from within your being. You are actually coming back to the creative principle in yourself, which is causing now discharge of the pent-up emotions, the tensions flowing out from the endocrine system, going out from the sensory nature of the body, and the fingers begin to tingle. Now taking this gesture and taking another affirmation to bring about greater intensification, we can go to what Master Jesus said, I and my Father are one, and the sense of oneness is also healing. This sense of oneness is healing. This sense of oneness is identity, and God being the pure life, the pure vitality, starts to pass through you, flushing out this mechanism. Now, as you bring your hands down, try to hold on to the feeling that is passing through you. By holding on to the feeling, you start the precipitation action in yourself. You cause something to precipitate within you. That level of buoyancy that you feel is starting to precipitate now, and you're holding on. It's a feeling of ease. As you hold on to it, you will feel the tension, the stress gradually flowing out from the body. Now, you will feel like if you're very light. You will feel like if you absolutely have no weight in your body. Your whole body seems to be like it's buoyant. There is the vitality flowing for the first time without any interruption, that buoyant feeling. Now, if you start flipping back from that state to old ideas or old affirmations about yourself, then you will disturb the result of the new affirmation about yourself. Therefore, don't flip back or don't call back old affirmations about yourself, but try to maintain the new affirmation of yourself. Don't let the mind go back to old thought habits about yourself. Let it stay in a new thought makeup of the self and let it permeate you. The longer it permeates you, it's like when cement is poured into a framing or a sort of a casing, it has to gradually dry, cure, and harden. Equally true, an affirmation must go through these basic conditions within to have some tangible result, a hardening result of a new change in yourself. Otherwise, you'll flip back into the old routine. The third prayer technique, we took first the groan, then we took affirmation. Let us take now a third prayer technique. The third prayer technique that one can have is chanting. In the East, music has been known to relieve stress and bring about healing. In the West, we know it as singing in the choir and participating in musical therapy. Music is very important to releasing the stresses in the body and bringing about healing. That is to bring about a flow of the vital life power through the mechanism that is now willing to accept it. If we chant, we can start the same process in ourselves. So in the East, we have what is called chanting or kirtan. Now those who have seen the Krishna conscious group people, they're always singing and chanting. So if they got any worries, the worries don't bother them no more and they're happy. And then we go down in Mississippi and they say, sing away your blues, brother, sing away those blues. And then Saul calls upon David to play upon his harp. We go down in some of the, churches there where they go into the spirituals. The mere gyration and rhythmic identification is a form of chanting or prayer healing. You go on the reservations, you know, and the early pioneers, they were so doggone worried that night when they were beating the tom-toms, well, those people are going to stop. They didn't know what the tom-toms were beating all night, you know. They were working up into a prayer chant to become identified with themselves. Equally true, we have many types of tensions and aggravations, frustrations from the daily activity around us, far more intense than our ancestors. Because in our ancestors' time, we could clobber the guy in the head and take off. Today, you clobber him with words or with expressions or suppress it. So we have more to release. There was a time, Sing Along with Mitch was doing a great deal for the country. Didn't know what good he was doing, but he was doing good if they'd only caught on. But let us look at chanting as a means of releasing stress. I'll chant a chant and you can join me. I'll go ahead first. The words are very simple and it pertains to unloading this inner stress. It goes like this. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. Dark is like a dark bird. Flies away, oh, flies away. Dark is like a dark bird. Flies away, oh, flies away. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. Dark is like a dark bird. Flies away, oh, flies away. Dark is like a dark bird. Flies away, oh, flies away. Who is in my temple? Who is in my temple? All the doors do open themselves. All the lights do light themselves. All the doors do open themselves. all the lights do light themselves. Dark is like a dark bird, flies away or flies away. Dark is like a dark bird, flies away or flies away. Feel. That is the important thing after a chant. When using it as therapy, is to feel. You are chanting primarily to increase the depth of feeling, at the same time bringing about release of the vital life power within the body, giving you release, giving you back health. There are many chants, and they're so numerous that you can pick out anyone you want. Among the Christian hymns, there are many wonderful chants. I know this one is very beautiful if you're familiar with it. And he walks with me, and he talks with me. Tells me I am his own, and the joys we share as we stand. No mother has ever known. You see, the mere idea that you're shifting away from your aches and pains to be identified with the rhythm, this is starting release, discharge in the body, and bringing about therapy. The fourth prayer technique is suggestion. Many of us are not aware that suggestion plays a very important part in our lives. And suggestion can be used as a prayer technique. Because man perceives through his senses, and he has to be receptive to the outside world. And whatever the outside world is programmed for him, he will respond. Good salesmanship is good suggestion. Now, wrong suggestion can make you sick. Yet good suggestions can make you feel well. Supposing you walk in the room and on the sign on the door says, the food in here is for the dog. Right away, that suggestion can leave an impression on your mind. And yet, some places would advertise, this is the only greasy spoon restaurant. This is how suggestion can play marvelous tricks on the mind. One place calls itself the greasy spoon, and it can be very clean. Another one calls itself the food is good for the dog. The mind may accept these as games. That when the mind can accept suggestion in terms of therapy, then it can do wonders. You know, some people can't take Novocaine when they go to the dentist. They have a violent reaction. And a dentist may have to use suggestive therapeutics or suggestive methods or ideas to relax the person in order to give them the necessary therapy to take the tooth out. Once we understand how suggestion works, we can now trigger the life force to move. If you're a lethargic person, it'll take you a while to get suggestions to react in your body, let alone in your mind. Because if you're very lethargic, very indifferent, you try to shut out. So you don't want to hear. You don't want to listen. And suggestion depends upon listening for it to be effective. So you find it's not the person who is the most educated that is the least susceptible to suggestion. He's the most susceptible to suggestion because he wants to listen more. But the person who doesn't want to listen, doesn't want to get involved with anything, that person is difficult to suggest anything. So, we as individuals who have a higher awareness, a higher sensitivity, a higher involvement with things, a higher participation, are quick to respond to suggestions. Therefore, suggestions will work faster for us than for other people who don't get involved. It's difficult for them to accept. Because if you can understand some of the mechanics involved in thinking, then suggestion becomes easy for you to do it. It's when you don't understand, then you are fearful, then you're in doubt, then you set up blocks or walls. Therefore, you're indifferent. So, suggestion becomes easy now for individuals who have a higher sensitivity, a higher participation level, than others who don't have a high participation level or sensitivity level. The more you can participate, the greater the effect of suggestion working for you. Suggestion is like a lever that can pry loose the locked up energy in some part of the mechanism, cause it to move. Most of our suppressed thought patterns are actually suggestions at one time. And we suppress them because we don't have any need for them, or we're afraid to release them. Or we get too bogged down, and therefore we can't empty it out or discharge it. We need counter suggestions to help us discharge. Well, let us see how we can apply suggestion now in terms of releasing stress, anxiety in ourselves. Suggestion usually comes in terms of sound, symbols, but here is a way that we can use suggestion that is very simple, and we will go back to Master Jesus with the healing technique, how he used suggestion, and see if we can participate in his suggestive set technique. He said to a certain man, when he healed him, "Go tell no man." That was a suggestion. He says, "Go tell no man." He was suggesting to this individual that was healed not to tell anything. And what was the result? The man went and spilled the beans. You see a peculiar phenomenon of suggestion? To tell someone not to do something is to make them do something. Don't eat the apple, make you eat the apple. So what are we learning from a suggestion? If we want to get results, what must we tell ourselves? Don't get well, remain sick. Love your misery, enjoy it. Sooner or later, this subconscious part of you says, "Hey, wait a minute, buddy. You ain't running this mechanism, I'm running it. I don't want to have this ache and pain." Suggestion will start releasing. The first time it happened to me, I thought I was crazy. That something like this would work in reverse. But after a while, I found out it was one of the natural laws of suggestion. That on a verbal level and a survival level, there is a cross slope. That if you tell yourself something, something back of your mind says, who are you kidding? But if you want that particular portion of your mechanism to do the thing that is supposed to be done for your benefit, don't suggest it the opposite. Otherwise it will reverse. You have to suggest something that it doesn't want to do consciously, but will do subconsciously. In other words, don't tell yourself you want to get well. Tell yourself you want to get sicker and sicker before you know it. Your subconscious mind will want to go the opposite direction. The moment you say you want to get well, do you know this will happen? Everybody seems to get sicker more. Things you seem to come crashing in. You say you want to get spiritual, and what happens? You get more materialistic. You don't want to get materialistic, you suddenly seem to get spiritual. It is a peculiar phenomenon in this suggestive movement. Now, that doesn't say all the time this will work. It will work a great portion of the time depending upon your own mental relationship. There are times when the suggestion is a suggestion and when released gives the exact result. It is a matter of recognizing that too. That when you say to yourself, I want to do this, and then the energy is released. That type of suggestion is linked in with willpower. That is the ability to lock desire to willpower. This is a different type of suggestion. It's not a suggestion that is dependent upon the survival nature of the mechanism to respond in contrary to the suggestion. The one that Jesus gave was contrary to the man's makeup. So the man did the opposite. Now, we want to do the suggestion that is in accordance with willpower. So if we give a suggestion in accordance with willpower, then we find that this is different. Willpower is the energy triggered off by the desire. You see the word power is there, life power, and will is the craving or the desire. These two forces are locked in now, depending upon the idea or the suggestion. Once you place the suggestion, you must execute some type of activity or maintain some type of pressure to bring about results. That's where they get the suggestion now. Where there is a will, there is a way. You see it? This is a positive suggestion utilizing willpower. Where there is a will, there is a way. Where there is a suggestive force, there is a driving force. But this is employed or released on a conscious level, and you have to sustain it. If you don't sustain it, it will not come into manifestation. So we can see then suggestion when it's applied utilizing willpower, and to sustain it is hinging on a particular principle. The greater the desire, the greater the flow of the energy. The greater the desire, the greater the flow of the energy. So, suggestion, the idea must be there, and you must have this desire for it, and you must execute this persistency to release it and have the experience. Not too long ago, I met a young man who had an automobile accident and injured his back in New Jersey for 5 years ago and could not get up out of the wheelchair. time allotted to me to work with him was very short. He could not get out of the chair himself. He had to be helped and put in. According to the doctors, he is not paralyzed. The cord is not damaged, but some of the nerves are being in a state of shock. Normally, he should be able to get up and walk, but there is no way by therapy known to release this particular condition. After 1 year of his accident, they found out that he had his spine twisted and didn't even know it. The doctors found that out after a year of x-rays that his spine was twisted. When I met him, they told me his situation. I knew that I could not help this man unless this man was willing to exert some degree of will. So I told him that the will releases the energy. And once he can release this energy by the will, he will be able to stand up and move. But it will take him time to walk, to get his body to correct itself. After working with him for an hour or two, getting him to relate to the suggestion that nothing physically, according to the doctors, are out of order, but strictly within him is the lack of the will to move the body. I couldn't tell him to walk is to sit down. That would be the reverse. That particular technique wouldn't work. So I said, if I said to him, sit down and enjoy your wheelchair, yeah, he may get up, get angry, so I can prove it to you now, you know. That's what I call a daring the person. But I could not do that because it wouldn't work on him. By making him realize he has the willpower within him, and the willpower within him is the divine willpower, all he has to do is exercise it. So we prayed and he closed his eyes and began to accept now that his willpower, not the divine power that's going to heal him, his own willpower is going to be raised up now for the first time. He's going to raise the maximum ability of his willpower to work for him. We can't treat the illness, we have to treat the thing that is necessary within him to give him the strength or the confidence in himself. So we prayed that his willpower would increase. We did not pray that he would get up to walk, we did not pray that his illness go away. We prayed that his willpower will increase so that he can release that particular block in his mind and let this energy flow. While praying for the will to increase, the man relived the entire accident of the automobile. He went through every physical motion of getting in the car. You can see the body going through body language movement, going up to the point when he crashed into the truck and groaned. Now, you know, this may sound pretty horrible, but you let the man groan too. So I waited and he groaned and groaned to the point where all the groans precipitated out of the system. And he realized that he was in the hospital and the doctors were working on him. And then he remembered what they said, that they can do nothing, he can't walk, but they don't find anything wrong with him. He had to get even that out of his system, that type of a suggestion out of his system. And we kept on praying for him to accept his will, because the will itself would not respond. When he could accept the will, his mother was standing in the room with his brother, and he raised himself on the chair. Now, they rushed to help him, and I said, no, leave him. If you make it, you make it. If you don't make it, try next time. And he struggled struggled, and you see it's like a chicken trying to break out of a shell. And those looking on might say to themselves, Adana is a very cruel man. He doesn't give a helping hand to this person. But you can't interfere. You have to let that will work, really work from inside. So he struggling, and all he's repeating, I have more will, I have more will. He's suggesting, this is the suggestion, I have more will. As he struggled repeating the word, and he wasn't talking too good, that you could understand, because his tongue, his neck was twisted in it. And the voice is struggling to even suggest to the mind, I have more will. Eventually, he got up straight, upright, for the first time, and held on to the chair, with his eyes open, and looked around. Then, we asked him if he could make one step forward. And this was the most crucial pain in his mind. But he barely could lift the leg, and he couldn't move them forward. And he kept on saying, I have more will. And we said, that is sufficient for today. You have overcome a great obstacle in releasing this energy through the spine. And he was able to sit back down, and he went home. That night, they said, for the first time, the man could sleep. His body began to relax. The next day when I saw him, he was able again to get up on his own, standing up on the wheelchair, sitting back down, and making efforts to move the feet forward. As my time was limited, all that was left for him to do, those that are around him, would maintain the atmosphere of increasing his will. I would say, in a short space of that time to come, the man will walk. Now there is no miracle. Yet it is a miracle. There is the spiritual principle working for the first time. His prayers for greater will started to increase, and he was able to manually move his body and put it into application. So, suggestion as a technique in prayer healing is very, very important. Now we come to another technique in prayer healing. That was suggestion and suggestion with willpower. The next technique in prayer healing is calling on divine will to flow through you. Because in your scriptures it says, nothing moves except by divine will. But when you are ill, many of us do not know what divine will is, and many of us are in doubt at this result. Yet many of us reach out to a divine principle asking for intervention. If we understand what divine will is and how it functions in us, then we can draw on this divine will to bring about healing. If we pray for anyone that is ill, we usually end up saying, thy will be done. You heard what I just said? If you're going to pray for someone, we usually end up saying, thy will be done. Never for one moment realizing what we are actually triggering off. Yet this divine will must flow through us to bring about healing in certain ways. When we pray for someone and merely end up saying, thy will be done, we are in a sense praying in a type of spiritual blanket. We are sending out this particular love, asking for a response from the vital power to intercede in the illness of the individual,
but not really aware of which one of the frequencies of this vital power has actually flowed in and corrected the individual. Modern science has gone as far as to show that man's thoughts do affect plant life. And in certain ways, whatever thought you impress upon a plant, that plant will begin to take it and shape itself. If you pray and send hate to this flower will start to shrivel up. If you send love, it will start to bloom. Yet researchers have shown that individuals can pray love over some things and it dies. And others can pray hate over some things and it grows. And some will pray neither hate nor love will affect it. One day you can pray love and one day you can pray hate and nothing will happen to the seed. When you realize that not all of us are working on the same frequency, so use divine will. Divine will flows through us in different frequencies. It will be just like 110 power is passing through this building from the main switch. Yet the bulbs in the building can have different wattages. Each one of us can be an expression of this power according to certain wattage or certain release. Not to say one person is more superior than the other. No. In the brain, this is happening, that we release this power differently at different times for different uses. And we're all distinct, all unique. When this power flows through you on a conscious level, you first have to be able to calibrate that, to know at what frequency the brain is in order to have that particular result. Otherwise, we would be praying and saying, for the individual, thy will be done. We can go through many types of prayers and at the same time end up saying, thy will be done. But if we know exactly what frequency the brain is lined up for to utilize divine will, then that particular image or manifestation will begin to occur. You know now what frequency divine will flows through you. Divine will flows through us first in the frequency of dissolving. The second frequency it flows through us is elimination. The fourth frequency is to strengthen. The third, I mean, is to strengthen, and the fourth is to rebuild. But you don't know which one of these four you are utilizing. All you know that when you pray, divine will be done for this person, and all of a sudden the other person gets well, gets strong, body starts rebuilding, but you don't know which one went out. If the person suddenly starts to discharge certain substances out of the body, when you pray for them, you don't know which one has caused it. Until you can calibrate your brain, or have the experience of where the brain is calibrated to find out which one of the frequencies divine will is flowing through you, then that would be your particular brainwave charge to direct the healing. Now, Master Jesus knew all the five. The fifth one is life over death. There are four that we are aware of, and the fifth one is rare. Divine will flows through us first as to eliminate or dissolve. Dissolve it first, it dissolves all problems that are there, like it flushes it out, causes it to break down. Eliminate, it causes it to dehydrate, other systems. The strengthen is to restore strength in the mechanism and to rebuild the molecules of the body to rebuild themselves. And finally, life over death. These are the five forces the divine will flows through us. Now, if we don't know which one of the five, and we say, thy will be done, something will happen in that person's life, and they are well. But you don't know which one. So, divine will is important when we are familiar with this particular one we're working with, as we understand plant research and see how thoughts affect them, we will find out that our own particular frequency is the channel for divine will to flow through us. We have to discover that for ourselves. Otherwise, we will simply be saying, thy will be done, and leave it to the divine intelligence to bring it to the manifestation. It isn't that we should not be aware of our own specific flow and leave divine will to carry on. It is that we should be aware of this specific flow and understand how it's carried on by the divine principle. We must participate, and by participating we become masters of ourselves. Prayer techniques help us to become masters of ourselves. There is also healing techniques through imagination. Now, in imagination, we use symbols. And we can get into a prayer group, and we all can close our eyes and imagine we are in a hole. And each one of us is traveling up this hole, or a cave, towards the light. And the cave can represent the illness. That is your so-called confrontation. And you will be given a shield, or sword, or some weapon to go ahead and cut your way out between you and the dragon to the clear light. This internal imagery can cause relief now. If you want to try it out to see what is the result of healing by imagination, we can do that in a matter of a few seconds. Let's close our eyes and see inside your brain is a dark hole. And the furthermost end of the darkness is an opening representing help or relief or light. And from where you are watching to that opening in the darkness is the distance you have to travel. So the A for the pain is that particular dragon or creature that is lurking in the darkness. The sword and the shield is your willpower, and you want more willpower to face this particular mental block. Now you can use the Christ ideal, and that would be like Jesus driving out the money chambers or the money changers out of the temple. Now he drove them out, but he did not kill them. So he gave them a good spanking and drove them out. Equally true in this imagination process. You can see yourself now giving all these thoughts that was a good spanking and driving them out of your mental temple. Then take a hose and turn it on and wash it out with some good disinfectant. It flows down the inside of the mind, flowing it out.
flowing about. Okay. To finalize our discussion, there are many, many techniques, but I'll give you one more that you can use for prayer healing. In thought, most of us don't realize we don't think in words. We all think in pictures. Even when we want to think of God, it will be a mental picture or a mental image. An illness also has an image of some shape or form. And if you were to relate to someone the illness, you would have to draw it, and that can be expressed in terms of color. Since we are individuals who think in images or pictures, we think also in color. Now there are 7 colors in your spectrum, and the ones that we are concerned with are lined up along the spinal column. From the base of the spine to the top of the head, we're concerned with red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, violet. If we take some ache or pain that we know of, or some deep-seated feeling that we haven't resolved in ourselves, and we want to bring about a healing, we can start what is called the color prayer, the prayer in colors. So you think of that particular incident in the color of red, and see it gradually dissolving itself and flowing out of your system in red. Well, let's try it, because action speaks louder than words. Take some thought, some incident. You can see it, all right, and then try to recall it. And see it flowing out in the color of red out of the spine into a red garbage bin. The shock, the anxiety, the tension, the resentment, all flowing out of the body into a red garbage bin. And the Christ is standing in the room, sending you love and forgiveness, and
you in turn are sending love and forgiveness to the individual you have the confrontation with. And all of this is flowing out into a red garbage bin. Now the whole scenery will change into orange. If you see the orange, it's okay. If you don't see it, it's occurring in the orange spectrum of the consciousness. And you will relive the same experience again and feel it flowing out of your system into an orange garbage bin. All the tension, all the shock, all the hostility and the resentment flowing out. And the Christ is standing in the room, sending you back love and forgiveness, and you in turn sending love and forgiveness to the individual that you have the confrontation with. And all of this is flowing out of the system into an orange garbage bin. Now the whole scenery is going to change into yellow. If you see the yellow, it's okay. If not, it's occurring in the yellow spectrum of your consciousness. And again, you will relive the entire experience, the confrontation, the anxiety, the tension, the stress, and all of this will flow out of you into a yellow garbage bin. And the Christ principle is standing in the room, sending you love and forgiveness, and you in turn sending love and forgiveness to the individual or individuals that you had the confrontation with. And it's all flowing out of you like a hot, hot heat into a yellow garbage bin. Now the scenery is going to change into green, and green is in line with the heart. And you're going to relive those same experiences, flowing it out from the heart. All the tension, the anxiety, the stress, the confrontation with the individual or individuals, flowing away from the heart. And the Christ, standing in the room, sending you back love and forgiveness, and you in turn is sending love and forgiveness to the individual, and it's flowing away from the heart. The scenery will change again now into blue surrounding the throat. And from the throat you will relive the entire experience again. The pain, the anguish, the grief, the disappointment, and all of this is flowing away from the throat like a heap. And the Christ is in the room sending you love and forgiveness, and you in turn sending love and forgiveness to the individual or individuals in that blue light away from the throat. Now the whole scenery will start to change into purple in line with the medulla oblongata, or the back of the head. And you will relive the experience again, the anguish, the tension, the resentment, the grief, and all that flow out from that part of the brain. The Christ is in the room sending you back love and forgiveness, and you are sending the love and forgiveness back to the individual. And all of it is going out of the back of the brain into a purple light. Gradually, the whole scenery will change into violet, and that is in the forehead now. If you see the violet, okay. If not, it's still occurring in the violet spectrum. And you will relive the entire experience, the anguish, the pain, the grief, the disappointment. And all of this is flowing out of you from the forehead. And the Christ is standing in the room, sending you love and forgiveness, and you in turn sending love and forgiveness to the individual. Now everything will start to diminish in size except you and the Christ. The scenery, the person you have the confrontation with, the problem, will all diminish now right down to the size of a penny. You and the Christ will start to get taller, taller and taller, bigger, bigger and bigger, and your arm will get very strong, especially the right arm, very strong, and you can reach up now and take that little penny of violet light, wherever it is, even if you don't see it, just reach up to the forehead where it is and take it from that spot like a heartbeat and throw it away from you and see it explode into white light. As you throw it, it will explode like white light and flow in like healing power into your body. If you hold on to it, then you're not letting go. But to make the physical movement of reaching up and throwing it is to cause the release by gesture, and therefore the white light or flowing energy will start flowing into the body. It's flowing into your body right now, correcting the tension from the pineal gland, the tension from the pituitary gland or forehead, from the medulla, the back of the head, all the eyes, ears, nose, lips. This energy is starting to descend, and yawning is the very first symptom of release. Crying is an even greater release. Heavy sighing is even a greater release of the stress and the tension. And it's flowing out of the body, and more energy is coming in, all the way down the neck, through the shoulder blades, into the arms, into the feet. And now this energy will start rising back up through your body in waves of laughter, and your whole body will start to laugh. And I want you to have a good laugh. Believe me, it's very important to laugh. You look at each other and let this laughter be infectious. Enjoy it. Enjoy the laughter because it's infectious. Thank you. We'd like to send out a special healing to a friend who has a problem with the heart. Tonight we'll try out a very unusual technique. Everyone's heart is vibrating within him normally, and
magnetically, each one of us is connected to one another by the breath. As long as that individual is breathing, we are all connected. Life connects us. And to bring about a healing, utilizing the heart, we're going to center our mind on the heart and its rhythm, what we're trying to establish magnetically and electrically in that individual that needs it, is a balanced rhythm in the heart right now. There is a need for it. So, understanding the mechanics of what will be involved, your own balanced rhythm of the heart will start to stabilize the unbalanced rhythm magnetically of the individual who is in the need. And by centering the mind on the heart in the color of green, think of the color green because it controls this section, and just breathe normally and feel this divine rhythm that controls all hearts magnetically flowing out. And the individual's name is John. So as we close our eyes and breathe normally, and let the natural rhythm of the heart flow and carry itself magnetically towards John. Divine will is already passing through you. You don't have to say anything or interfere with it. You allow it to flow through you, through the heart, in its natural rhythm, and it's flowing out magnetically to John, wherever he is, and he is becoming magnetically aligned with the natural heart rhythm. The secret of the success lies in the ability to let go and let the natural heart rhythm magnetically telegraph to John's heart rhythm. Christ is standing in the room. And his sacred heart is synchronizing all the hearts, and John's heart rhythm into one rhythm. People may resent the fact you touched them, but they accepted them so much better. You always have to give them that right to, if they participate, which is very good, they should, then the laying on of their hands is very important. Not to do this
to them. They also have to believe that they're going to heal.
Well, this is the question that Master Jesus did not do anything until he was asked, therefore offering no resistance. Yet he went to a place to help them, and they did not ask. Yet he said, with these people I can do nothing. So you see, asking is a necessary prerequisite for healing. But if we go primarily to do something in an area and there is a doubt and the hostility, the resentment, we might as well do like Master Jesus, admit that these people love their illness. Don't you know lots of people love their illness? They don't want to get rid of it, because that's the only means they can hold on to it.
Supposing you didn't go to heal, you know, and the person never asked you, Grace. Grace. See, grace is that wonderful blessing that comes to you without asking. Well, it has to do with healing. God and his conditions bring sometimes agony first before relief, brings tremendous impact before you have realization. We are trying to regulate how God should give us the relief, how God should give us the realization. We are too busy trying to set it up according to our own prescribed way of experience. Now, when it comes to you, Master Jesus said it will come like a thief in the night. A thief does not tell you when he's going to come and rob you. But after the robbery is over, you say, what a fool you are not to sit up all night and wait for it. So God's way of giving us anything is unanticipatory. We cannot anticipate how God gives us things. Realize that? Well, then he has to pray for the Lord to remove the pride. Oh yes, he realizes it because he knows he doesn't want to lose faith. He knows. You can pray for a person to recognize he has the pride. You can pray for the person to suddenly get an illumination that pride is the thing he has to let go of. But you don't pray to remove his illness. If pride is blocking his illness, then remove the very first thing that is blocking it. Pray for him to get the awakening to accept that this pride is blocking. And when this pride is no longer there, he will see the condition. Yes. As long as someone has asked highway knocked over by automobiles in our contest, you're not aware of it. He's not aware of it. That if someone should say to you, such and such a person that has an auto accident, could he do something, pray? Yes. Then they will get the benefit. But we don't just jump as if we're praying for the whole world of unconscious people in auto accidents, because we're not going to help them. Now, if we are deeply concerned from a prayer technique, for the benefit of the individual, we should be praying that individuals are more aware of themselves when they enter the highway to drive. This should be something that what we call creating the environment of love. We have a right to create an environment of safety and consciousness, just as much as a policeman has a right to regulate traffic for the benefit of the individual. We as individuals have a right to generate a safety consciousness environment. In other words, we can take part in things that are essential to make individuals more responsible in their growth. This we to be doing more for them. See, if we pray, let's say now, out there people are driving their automobile. Some are not too conscious of what they're doing or responsible for what they're doing. They're taking chances. We can then pray for the healing vibrations to flow in the atmosphere all the time to make individuals responsible of their obligation. Now, we're not going to prevent them from getting into accidents, or we're not going to pray and say that they get into an accident, they're going to be well. That's not what we're doing. We're trying to set up a safety conscious environment and a response to the responsibility involved in driving. Equally true, we can set up what is called a health conscious environment of individuals taking more active part in their health. We can establish the environmental field. And you think that is what you are. So if you're conscious of your own home and set up in your own home this environment for health safety, then this can extend out now to include others. In that way, many people will be suddenly awakening from the ignorance. All right, look at it. I'm more interested.
Karma sometimes prevents the effectiveness.
Can what?
Karma.
Yes, it can.
It prevents the effectiveness of a healing ministration.
Yes, it can. It can. The karma can. You see, the karma can block it. Because the karma is so strong in some people and so deep-seated in them, they can't turn loose, even when they want the healing. They are still blocking. Well, remember this. Individuals who take upon themselves to heal, if it's a profession, like the medical profession, they are using certain laws to bring about healing of the individual. Now, the doctor may not fully aware it's all karma. He's doing the best he can under the circumstances to bring about that healing. If we're dealing with healing by prayer thoughts, then we're dealing with a different force field altogether now. We're dealing with thought patterns that trigger these results in that individual. The doctor is not concerned with the thought pattern right away. The individual is ill, he's brought to the doctor as a last resort. The doctor does what he can to alleviate the pain. But when he digs into the history of the man's illness, he may find it goes beyond mere physical laws. It may go into the superphysical laws or metaphysical laws. And there he's running into karma, truth. But he is already placed in a position by the patient and the patient's relatives to be on demand, to be involved with it. Now, when you're on demand and to be involved with it, then you have that particular responsibility to carry. Jesus did not take on what he did not commit himself to. He committed himself whenever they asked. So we are not blocking karma or taking it on, or the karma is responsible. We are simply being a channel now to relieve it whenever it's asked of us. So it's necessary that we be asked. three choices. Take over their responsibility and run their life with them. One. Two. They have to ask you, and if they don't have the capacity to ask, you have concern, then you have to work with that choice of being the go-between to get them back in a rational way. After all, they are living beings, they're your brothers, they're related to you. The third is the collective help of others through their concern. If you turn to others with this concern, and those who are competent to participate, they can help you know this person. These are the fears you will find yourself eventually facing. As long as they are no longer competent of doing anything, you may have to assume that responsibility. Now, remember, when we assume the responsibility, if we think the responsibility is going to make us weaker, then that is what you don't want to involve yourself with. But if the responsibility would make you stronger, give you more insight into your fellow man, then I'd say take it. Because greater the responsibility, greater the person. Karma is not fatalistic, or any condition in this world is fatalistic. It's an opportunity to test ourselves if we can rise above it and do something constructive. Though they may hate you after you make them well, but that's all right. Better to be hated for making them well than not to try. When you decide,
if you find yourself in the millions and you know everyone's playing and expect for the evil to be eliminated, you know, thoughts to be eliminated, then you resign yourself to say, I'm at the right place, at the right experience. You know, you're going to go through it?
Yes.
And when you say that, that is your karma, you accept it.
That's divine will. You're working with it. And put on back down. Ask for the courage to face it.
Well, you have the courage, but you say that I'm in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. That's it. I think it's going to be handled.
Yeah.
Denying them? No, don't refuse help. Never refuse help. Remember, you don't refuse anybody any kind of help. They need help. Sometimes they may not be rational enough to ask for their help. Now remember, you're taking the chance of the responsibility. When you take that responsibility, you must be concerned with the implications of it. Because whenever you react with it, you're the one that will say to yourself, you wish you never got into it. But don't make that the remark after you get into it. You see, because you don't want that to be some escape. Once you get into the thing, once you accept the thing, which is confrontation or commitment, once you make a commitment, then you want all the help you can to resolve it. Even though that person may detest you after you make them well. You don't know if they'll detest you or they may love you. Granted, they may love you, which you anticipate they should do. But there are those who may hate you even after you make them well. They will say to you, why did you leave me in my misery? You see? All right, good. You did that. You got strength out of it. But if the individual is that bent on destroying himself after you pull him out, you try your best. You can only send them love. And you'll have to do like Jesus. With these people, I can do nothing. They are so bent, they're so imprisoned in their thought patterns to destroy themselves. And you know you're trying your best, and others around you are equipped to do it. trying their best, and the person still continues.
Symptoms
of possessiveness or obsession from some disincarnate being, when in reality the being will be totally blameless and not be there. We have to find out what we're talking about. This discharge of energy can take on that particular condition. The negative forces in us can take on that. It can take on all types of shapes and behavior and give us all the behavior, make us crawl on the floor, squirm and do everything. And we may believe we are totally obsessed by some being from some other dimension. We don't even know that how this mechanism will go through it. This mechanism is capable of putting itself into 84,000 positions. And you'll think you've got 84,000 disincarnate beings in you. So it's to find out which one we're talking about, if truly you're obsessed or possessed by some being, or if the negative energy is so locked up in you that is causing this malfunction to appear, and you may appear to be talking in all types of songs, you may hear all kinds of voices, strictly coming all from the suppressed mechanism. So it's a matter of knowing which we're dealing with. In the case with Jesus and the man who lived in the cemetery, when he was brought to Jesus, the first remark they made to Jesus, "We know who you are, let us go." Jesus was an initiate, and if it's an incarnate entity in that man's body, if that entity was there, that entity is not an initiate, therefore it cannot stand within the frequency of Jesus. So it would not want to be exposed. So it will immediately go out, and then it will seek exit into another body form. So it chose the swine to go into. Now, if the person is possessed, we can pray to exorcise that person and create a healing. But we have to be certain if that's truly what we are driving out, or maybe not that we're driving out, maybe we've actually released for the first time pent up negative charges, which gives the person release. With that we have to realize what is happening. You see? Now, if we... how do you know the person is obsessed? Was he dabbling in any kind of a metaphysical practice that was causing him to be obsessed? You see, these are things we have to check into first before we can say he is obsessed. It isn't that they don't exist, don't get me wrong. They do exist, but it's to be certain that this is what is occurring before we go say that's what it is. Now, Jesus, if you want to use, if you're in doubt that it's not negative force field suppressed, if you think it is an entity possessing the person, then do the exorcism of the early churches by walking around the body and commanding the spirit to leave the body in the name of the Christ. And if this being that is supposed to be talking through this body would admit that Christ was in the human body, that this Christ consciousness came into the human body at one time, if it will admit that Jesus was a realized man, then the mere thought would start the process changing. You can drive it out. An energy force will come in to correct it. Now, we have the angels. These are energy forces that were designed by the Creator to minister unto man. You can call on these forces to participate in driving out that entity in the body. Now, if there are no entity to deal with, this is what we're trying to establish. If there is an entity, we can call on the Christ to correct it. If there aren't no entities, we have to call on something else first before we can correct it. We have to know exactly what is going on inside.
If you want to release something specifically from your own body right now, would you suggest
You know, some masters will tell you go see a doctor. Don't run from the doctor too, you know. He may have a quick remedy for the allergy too. Sometimes when they can't do it, then you may go to a prayer technique. All right, we are confronted with something. We are afraid to go to the doctor because it costs too much money. That's number one. That's our basic fear. Number two, we're afraid to go to the doctor because you don't know what they're doing. And it's easier to get down on your knees and pray because this seems to be the quickest way and would be a more wholesome way. Yet you may not realize that going to the doctor, that's one way God is working through doctors too. That the particular problem you have to solve may have to be resolved by that method too. Many methods are there to resolve it. And if you want to resolve it, always check it out first. If you want to use prayer, then remember that God has no blemish. God is pure light. In your consciousness, if you have a thought that is impeding and can't release it, then it's going to come out as a blemish. Now, before your particular symptom appeared, can you remember of having any shock or disappointment? Before it occurred in your body, was there any shock, any disappointment in your life? See, many of these allergies are not necessarily karma too. It's not necessarily we did anything. Remember, there was a blind man that came to Jesus. And they brought him and said, who sinned, the parent or the man? And he said, neither. So if neither were involved, then it's nothing to do with karma, let alone nothing to do with heredity. Each case is different. But we can pray, that's not what we can pray. We can pray and ask for help. And sometimes if it works, that prayer that releases it, maybe the one that is necessary. If it doesn't work, then you have to look for something else. So keep the prayer in mind of you and your father are one. If you have this prayer in mind, it'll release. But better than that is to not ask for the release of the problem, ask for the knowledge or the understanding what caused the problem. Once you get that understanding or a dream, ask for a dream, even possible for a dream to show up in a dream. If you can ask for that, then it will give you an insight to where the problem really is. Then when you have the insight to the problem, then that problem would go away completely and you would not be bothered with it. So if I was going to have this, I would ask for a dream to show me what caused it, where it came from. And from the dream I may get an insight. Then I can correct it and just to go and stop it off, and then it repeats itself again. Yes?
Is it ethical to take on someone else's responsibility when they're not capable? And if so, if it is ethical, is that taking on someone's
problem? When a child bangs its knee, and you're an adult, would it be unethical to take his knee and clean it up?
No, I was thinking of an older person that could ask and does not ask because they're not capable. Is it all right in that case to help with healing and they're not asking?
I think we're going to be too over-concerned
and find ourselves out on a limb trying to be 100% Mary Nightingale, or what you call her again, what's her name? Florence Nightingale. See, all right, Florence Nightingale. But this is to say, Florence Nightingale did not have concern for her fellow men. She did, and she did do something. We do have a right, yes, but remember, in the right, when we're involving with healing and with individuals, we still got to be liable to some extent. Now, if you accept, remember, you have to accept the fact that if you take on the condition of getting involved with that person, even if they don't ask, you must be prepared that they may be hostile to you when you heal them or help them, or they may love you for it. You got to be prepared for both, so that you can't say to yourself, I did this for this person, look what they did back to me, or look what they're doing. You should not be in that particular frame of mind after it's happened. You have to take on that responsibility and say, this is what you got into, and this is what it is. So you have to love them in spite of themselves.
So if someone is sick and is not capable of helping themselves, you can step in if they don't ask
you. Yes, you can step in. Well, you see, many people were drowning one time, and a man plunged in to help them, to save them. You know what happened? He drowned it with them too. So we don't have to do that all the time, because some of us are not going to be thankful. We have to take that into consideration, that whenever we commit ourselves with another person, when we're not asked, we cannot expect them to love us if they don't want, even though they've been helped and gained their help back. And even Jesus knew that. So we got to be prepared for this. We have a right to jump in and help the individual, but we also must be prepared for the, what you call, the ingratitude of it. You know the statement, say the hand by the pot or something, the pot by the hand, and wash the pot or something. I don't know how it goes, but I know.
By
the hand that feeds it, all right. We have many people like that, so do not feel that when you do something for someone, they are ungrateful. Huh? Right. In the case of national emergency, the government don't care who, if you love them, they're going to go in and do what they're supposed to do, and you like it or not, you can curse them after. If we're infested with rats and going to create a pestilence and affect the national safety of individuals, the government's not going to wait to you and say it's your karma, you're going to go in. They're going to go in there and do something. So we have to be prepared to act on that premise too. We want to do things for people.